Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
I'm Jason Whitlock.
Yes, you are.
He's Marcellus Wiley. That dude.
Yes, sir.
All right, welcome to Speak for Yourself, the most fearless show in sports. Coming up, we'll tell you what's really driving Ezekiel Elliott's holdout. And 1 hour from now, we're going to get into Tom Brady's new contract extension and what it all means. But we start today in Cleveland. All right, Marcellus, you may be too young to remember the movie Smokey and the Bandit. It starred Burt Reynolds, Sally Fields, and the comedian Jackie Gleason. A billionaire paid Bo Bandit a bunch of money to escort a truckload of bootleg Coors beer from Texas Arcana to Atlanta for a stock car race celebration. Sheriff Buford T. Justice chased Bo Bandit all over the South trying to rescue his son's bride. Smokey and the Bandit was a blockbuster. The only reason it's not more popular is because it was released in the same year as the original Star Wars. I bring all this up because we're witnessing a real-life reenactment of Smokey and the Bandit. Only this time, little Smokey is Cleveland Browns quarterback Baker Mayfield, and he's chasing after radio/TV host Sheriff Colin T. Cowherd. And Odell Beckham Jr. is driving shotgun with little Smokey. All right, this weekend, Mayfield cut the latest scene for this action comedy thriller when he went to a Cleveland Indians game and chugged a beer for the cameras and made a spectacle of himself. And then the Indians' Twitter feed taunted Cowherd, tweeting out a video of Mayfield slamming beer and a fake quote from Sheriff Colin T. Cowherd. The tweet read, "I just don't like the idea of my franchise quarterback spending time at a baseball game. I mean, what are you doing, Baker Mayfield? You don't see guys like Aaron Rodgers shotgunning beers. Just not a good look. Go watch some film. At Colin Cowherd." I've been calling Baker Mayfield Little Smokey for almost a year now. The Cleveland quarterback wants all the smoke. He likes conflict. It fuels him. He seeks it out. He revels in it. 3 months ago, he made T-shirts trolling Cowherd. Before that, he engaged in a silly Twitter feud with Cowherd. It appears the city of Cleveland is following the lead of its quarterback. Cleveland wants smoke. The Indians are fanning the flames. This is high risk. If I'm Browns general manager John Dorsey, first-time head coach Freddie Kitchens, and Browns owner Jimmy Haslam, I'm quite concerned. It's hard as hell to control a fire. The winds can change direction. The fire that has Baker Mayfield cooking could turn and engulf the rest of the team. Plus, you have to fight wildfire with fire. Odell Beckham Jr. loves attention, too. He doesn't enjoy the smoke the way Mayfield does, but if that's the way to draw attention in Cleveland, OBJ is going to join the firefight. Little Smokey is the wildest thing we've seen at quarterback in the NFL since Brett Favre was pill-popping and raising hell in Green Bay. We've never seen a quarterback pick fights publicly, have we? Baker told his former coach, Hugh Jackson, to kick rocks. Little Smokey loves to taunt Sheriff Colin T. Cowherd. Mayfield apparently isn't interested in adjusting the style that made him a Heisman Trophy winner in college and the number one pick in the 2018 draft. I think it's a mistake for Mayfield to put this much pressure on himself and an organization that's trying to win under the direction of a first-time head coach. Smoke inhalation is deadly. But I'll tell you what, I'm watching this movie. It's going to be another blockbuster. All right, joining the desk now, Hall of Famer, friend of the show, glad to have him back. Where the hell you been, E.D. Eric Dickerson, in the house?
With all these young kids,
man, I miss fighting. All right. And the NFL Network's Bucky Brooks, friend of the program, smartest man on the show. All right, Marcellus, I'll start with you.
Carolina education.
Will all the smoke backfire on the Browns?
No, I don't think it will. One, they've made this place a destination. Even if it's just in mindset, it's an attraction to free agents. It's an attraction to those on this roster right now. They feel like they've arrived. Now, obviously, you got to go out there and prove that with the results and the win-loss column. But in terms of hype and in terms of energy, this is great motivation for the place that we used to call the mistake by the lake. Think about the mistake by the lake and how that would deflate you if you're on that roster. wearing those doo-doo brown outfits and just going out there like, I mean, you lose games before you even get to the stadium just because you're not as up because you're on the Cleveland Browns. A couple years ago, this is an 0-16 team. Now, when you feel like you've arrived, all of a sudden, that energy picks up, and we know that football is a great game of skill, but a greater game of will. And whenever you can pour on energy to that, I've seen magical things happen. My best case in point, personally, you know, when coach comes out with the black uniforms that week, all of a sudden, you're like, what? I've seen that on a lower level to the professional level. Tennessee Titans come to mind. 4 years with Jeff Fisher. This was a non-winning team, 8-8 at best. They even were 2-14 the year he came in. Sorry, we used to play Tennessee. We were like, ooh, God, is that an expansion team? What's going on with them? New stadium, all of a sudden, new energy. Guess what? 13-3 went to the Super Bowl. Just like that with the same players. I think right now, when you have this new energy, this new mindset, you can get new results.
Well, my opinion is that Baker Mayfield, I like Baker. From the beginning, I've liked him. I liked him.
You like the hype.
I like the hype. You know, you're right. When we used to play Cleveland, you know, we called the Cleveland Clowns and the Cincinnati Bungles. So, I mean, it gives them identity. I mean, it really does. You know, he's at a baseball game having a good time. It just shows he's a fan. If his name was John Thompson and this thing, the ultimate fan, they'd be like, look at the ultimate fan. He's having a great time at the baseball game. That's it.
He'd also make a lot less money.
Of course he would.
Joe Blow.
But the thing is that he's not out, you know, running from the police.
No more.
Anymore.
He stopped that. You know, he got caught.
Doing things like hitting women, doing all that kind of stuff. No. He's doing stuff that's fun at a baseball game.
He's in training camp.
Hey, look, you know what? He's 20, was he 21 or 22 years old? Whatever, he's in his 20s. When you're 21 or 22 years old, you kind of tell me everybody up here has done something like, man, I wish I wouldn't have did that. You know, all of us have. Mm. But that, I'm with that. He's got a pretty woman sitting next to him. What's wrong with
that? Fiance.
I don't care. She's still a woman.
His wife.
Which, yeah. Well, yeah, his wife. So, hey,
Hop that broom.
I'm with it. I like it. I like the energy.
So, and I think in Cleveland, the reason why it resonates, particularly with the executives, I was with the Green Bay Packers in the mid-90s. All those guys, John Dorsey, Lonzo Highsmith, Elliott Wolfs, whose dad was the general manager for the Packers. Brett Favre would have a good time and be out and about. And at the same time, he won 3 straight MVPs. The thing that this does, though, is the more you put spotlight on your off-field endeavors, the more your on-field needs to be tight. So Baker Mayfield this year, he doesn't have the luxury of being able to enjoy a sophomore slide, a sophomore slump. He has to come out and play at a higher level. If not, all of these little things that we've talked about, they then become major headlines, and he has to answer for those things if his play isn't up to par.
They have a first-time head coach. They haven't done anything. It was nice. They went 7-8-1 a year ago.
Yes.
This reminds me of what team was that on they were calling the Dream Team? And what
the Eagles.
Eagles.
Yeah.
Vince Young. It was the Dream. Wasn't it? Dream Team.
Uh-huh.
And that turned into a nightmare real quick.
Yeah.
I mean, so I just don't. I think this works for Baker Mayfield and Baker Mayfield alone. Mm. And what he's doing, he's dragging the Cleveland Indians. He's dragging the whole team into it. And I'm not sure if I'm a first-time head coach with Odell Beckham Jr. new to the fold. Because I'm just saying, Odell Beckham is not a conflict guy. He likes attention, but not conflict. He don't want any smoke. But if the way to get attention is to beef and do those things, we're going to start seeing this affect other players, and they're going to turn this into a circus more than a football team. I just think for Baker, it works. I'm not sure if he's dragging the rest of the team into a fight that they really don't want.
Well, let me push back. If you don't chug the beer, you ain't going 16-0. Like, think about the conference. Like, I love when people always like, oh, you over there messing it up. Bruh, this is not connected to that as much as you think it is. I saw the war paint dudes show up in the locker room, man. Oh, yes, sir. Yo, sir. Ready for battle. Kickoff. Woo, pat. Where'd the war paint go? You know where it went? Yeah, that was a locker room thing. This on this field, it's a moment of truth. No matter how you dress it up, you got to respond then and then only. How you get there, how you prepare, what's your process, it's all different. It may look different from the exterior. Even in this moment, The Cleveland Indians were tied 2-2 in that game. Baker chugs a beer, which I've never seen before. He bit the beer.
Look different. I've seen that.
You seen that?
Yeah, I've seen
that. Man, I've been to frat parties, passed out at a couple. I ain't never seen anybody bite the beer and take it to the head like that. But five runs were scored just in that moment because of the energy I'm talking about, man. It's something if you can capture, run with it.
Who hit the home run?
I ain't watching baseball.
The guy in his jersey he's wearing.
Even more.
I just think it's tough with Baker. Like, he brings it on. Like, you say he likes to smoke. Man, it's tough to engage in all those battles all the time. At some point, you just kind of want him to do his deal. I want everybody to always be comfortable in their own skin. But, man, when you're the franchise quarterback, you just want to go easy. You just want to go easy and make sure that you're doing all the right things. You don't bring undue attention to yourself.
But why? That's so fear-based. That's basically what it's saying is when I hit my slump, which every quarterback does.
Oh, he's gonna hit it.
When I hit my slump, be nice to me. Who cares? Like, my slump is my slump. I don't care how you talk about me. You're not gonna make the throws or miss them by the talk.
Everybody says that.
Until they hit it.
So then we go to the media scrum, and oh, he's not available. Now we can't get any questions. So if you do it, you gotta be able to be willing to stand in it.
It's just
you're making yourself. I'm not saying you're putting more pressure on yourself, but you just have to be able to respond when it doesn't go your way.
I agree with you. One thing you said, that he has to go out and win. That's the most important thing. But this is Baker Mayfield in college.
Oh, no, this is who he is.
This is him in college. All of a sudden, you want him to be a choir boy, sit back to baseball game?
No.
Be who you are. Be the guy that you are, because sooner or later, you know what? It's like cars. You're going to play your hand. You got to drop it. You're going to be who you are.
Mm-hmm. Look, man, I'm rooting for this dude. He's exciting. I want Mayfield and Mahomes to be the next great football rivalry. I think it's great for football. However, you don't have to engage and give energy to every scrap and every fight. And
why not?
Because it's just an energy drain. And you're dragging other people. There's 52 other guys in that locker room. And look, I would say 25 of them probably love the hell out of Baker Mayfield and ride or die, Baker Mayfield. Then there's the rest that are kind of ambivalent and don't want people coming in the locker room. Hey, what'd you think about Baker Mayfield chugging that beer at the Cleveland? Oh, we got to talk about this.
That's better than talking about 0-16. Let's talk about beer.
We got to talk about Baker Mayfield again and again and again about some kiddie stuff that I'm not in. Look. That's all I'm saying. The rest of the personalities in that locker room, a lot of them don't want to be bothered with this.
Well, the authentic Baker Mayfield is what I always want you to present. We talked about this last week with Mike Tomlin. He said, I don't want anything out of Ben Roethlisberger but to lead through his own voice. Be yourself. We could deal with everything else that comes from that. And him knowing beyond being a player, sometimes the brand consciousness comes into play. Sometimes you think about how this is going to play. This is even a smart play. Beyond being authentic, think about it. The line of being the understated quarterback, leader of your team, sitting on your hands is too damn long. If you're Baker Mayfield, you're like, how many guys have actually wanted to smoke and actually dealt with it, could breathe through that smoke? What warms you can burn you, but what if it doesn't burn me? What if I'm actually the one that can stand there, like you said, through adversity? Oh, I'm available. I'll talk through it. If he can play that, Joe Namath 2.0, whatever this may look like, he's a rock star.
He's a rock star in Cleveland right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, look, if they hypothetically, let's just say they go out and go 12-4 to the football season. I'm just saying. That's hypothetically.
No, that's
you know
great.
How he's a superstar automatically. I mean,
okay,
you can live.
But
hold it. If it goes reversed, I still believe people are going to still like, we still love our quarterback. We just love his, he plays hard. Yeah, he gives us something to fight for. If he's not coming to, oh, well, you know, we lost again today, you know, it's a bad day, you know, it's my
fault.
If they
start out 3-3, or God forbid 2-4, everybody in that organization is going to be having to answer questions about all this little extracurricular stuff around Baker Mayfield. It's unnecessary. It's unfair to a first-time head coach. I get it. The Browns want some attention. Everybody wants some attention. I just don't think this is a smart, long-term play. He can be himself. I'm one of the most profane, non-PC comedic persons I know. I mean, any joke that comes to my mind is very profane and inappropriate. I can't just do that and show it all the time. It would be unfair to everybody else.
But that's you.
What?
That's you.
That's how you built.
That's how you are.
That's how you're built.
He's different. Mm-hmm. That's how he's built. That's like somebody, you ever meet somebody and say, every time you see this guy, he's smiling. Man, I don't see how he do it all the time. Every time. Mm. That's him. He's that energy. Every time you see
him. It starts impacting other people again. Because I'm a conflict guy, too. The reason why I like the dude, again, he's like me. And Bucky, more than anybody knows, days in the 90s and kids, there wasn't a fight I would turn down. But eventually, what I found out is like, man, a lot of my coworkers like, damn, man, can I get some shine? Mm.
So am I hearing it great that basically don't fight all those fights because eventually you're going to lose? Like, who gives a damn if you lose? Like, it's still fear-based. You're anchored out of your own perspective, which is great, but you have to give people freedom to live a different way and get to the same place differently. And I like a guy who's just like, look,
it's cut
from, I'm not doing it the way you want me to do
it. It's cut from the exact same cloth of the criticism I've had about LeBron James. Mm. You start sucking up all the oxygen, and you look around, mm-hmm. and there's some guys you playing with that can't breathe.
But he's still playing.
And he has a lot of guys. They didn't need the oxygen. You got ODL, you got Jarvis, you got some other guys, some other personalities. And so, look, it's a big thing for them. Cleveland is like a household brand. You go all the way back during their heyday when Marty was there and the way they played, and they have a storied franchise and a tough fan base that is excited and eager for them to win. Look, man, all eyes are on them. They are must-see TV this year. He's walking into the light. We'll see if it burns them, though.
What if this is just overcorrection? A lot of times when you've been through hell, franchise, just the fact that no one notices you, you know you overcorrect. Sometimes you go a little far, you exaggerate it, but then that comes back and regresses to the mean once you realize, oh, they're respecting us. So we don't have to, even the Eagles did it in their Super Bowl win. They're putting on dog masks and stuff.
Pay attention
to me. And then once you win, I didn't see a damn dog mask, did you? And they try to
Meek Mill, I get it.
Maybe this is a part of their design just to say, look over here, because we are ready. We'll see once they get there if they're ready, and if they are, will they continue with this?
My money's on Cal Herd.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to The Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Eric Dickerson is back with us, and we're joined for the first time ever by the Cowboys' number one beat writer, for the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, Clarence Hill. I don't know if you guys know this. Clarence started covering the Cowboys Roger Staubach's rookie year.
Damn!
Clarence, you know, It feels like that.
I think in 48.
Wow.
First Omega to cross.
Wow.
I'm glad you are, too.
Shout out my boys is watching them. You got the purple on. Anyway, all right, time for a big story.
Respect.
Let's move to the Cowboys, who are now entering the second week of training camp without Ezekiel Elliott as the running back's holdout continues to drag on. Dak Prescott says he's in communication with his good friend Zeke, but that quote, business is business. Zeke, meanwhile, is clearly paying close attention to what's happening in camp, tweeting some angry faces after the team tweeted out some love to rookie running back Mike Weber. All right. Clarence, I've been trying to convince these guys for the past 2 weeks that Ezekiel Elliott's contract problems are directly related to Dak Prescott's desire for $30 or $32 million a year. You agree or disagree?
Okay, let me stop one thing. That emoji he tweeted out is not an angry emoji. That's a young folks thing. That is triumph. He's supporting his boy, Mike Weber. That's not an anger emoji. Most us olds think that's anger. It's not. You ask some young folks, the millennials, that's a positive emoji.
The youngsters are going to say triumph.
Yes.
Millennials are going to sit there and say triumph.
Yes, you can Google it. I Googled it. There's a definition for it. It's called the triumph emoji.
You need to go to Urban Dictionary then, because that looks like I'm upset.
I know what it looks like. I know what it looks like, but that's not how they interpret it.
I'm going to tell you this.
That's not how they interpret it.
Clarence,
I had to look this up myself.
All right, go ahead.
I'm just saying, that's not how they interpret it. Anyway, And he's used that emoji before after long runs, so it's not a negative thing. He's, that's his boy Mike Weber from Ohio State. There's no way it was going to be negative.
I agree with
you. Okay? Regarding Dak and Zeke, they're boys, okay? There's no way Zeke is jealous of Dak's money. Not at all.
Can he be driven by it? You don't have to be jealous.
He's not driven by it. He's driven by getting his own money. You got to understand, when they opened the offseason, Stephen Jones said, I want to pay Dak now. I want to pay Amari now because in the last year of their deals. But I want to kick Zeke to next year, okay? It's about getting paid now. Before, Stephen Jones said, we're going to prioritize Dak and Amari. We're going to wait on Zeke. Now, after the holdout, we're talking about Zeke's money now. They're addressing Zeke's contract now. So mission accomplished for Zeke. The holdout got the Cowboys addressing his contract now with Dak and with Amari.
Well, we got to separate the real world from the football world in terms of jealousy and what's driving you. Look, there, you could be boys. And in the real world, we all know that there's enough to go around. So therefore, I'm not mad at you getting yours before me, with me, after me, whatever. But in football, there are finite resources, brother. There is a salary cap. There is a point where you're like, whatever you do affects what I can do. And that's when you start getting that pecking order. And I've been in contract situations before with friends and just also with just teammates. Like, we're a little distant in terms of our friendship, but we're on the same squad. And you're always taking a peek because you're trying to see what's left. And as I said before, Zeke is upstairs right now smelling bacon downstairs, and it's cooking, and he's hungry, but it ain't his turn to go eat. So he's like, save me some pieces of bacon, and we'll see if Dak is going to allow for that.
Well, it's not Dak's choice.
Okay? Oh, yes, it is.
No, Dak going to get his. He's supposed to get his. Zeke's going to get his. Amari's going to get his, just like DeMarcus Lawrence got his.
In the same week that Tom Brady made it a choice to get a pay raise to $23 million, it's not your choice?
We're talking about Tom Brady.
Hold on, but we're talking about choices.
Is Bill Belichick in Dallas?
Are we talking about
you
choices?
Get Bill Belichick. Belichick in Dallas, then we can talk about that. Whole situation in New England is interesting.
It is.
That owner's making a lot of money, ain't paying nobody, okay?
I love it.
That's a whole different situation. He also has a wife that makes billions of dollars, and she's the breadwinner of that family. Everybody can't be like that.
I get it.
But understanding the Cowboys cap situation, they got money to pay all three. It's not a situation where they got to choose. Mm-hmm. And they want to pay all three. They've given good contract offers to all three.
I heard you say earlier Byron Jones may not get his money.
Well, Byron Jones just had hip surgery. Let's see what he does coming off hip surgery. Mm. And again, you got Chris Richard there, the architect, that Legion of Boom secondary. He has a certain type of cornerbacks he like. You know, he may want to groom some of these young guys. We'll see. But right now, they're addressing the big three. The Cowboys have $25 million in cap room on this year's cap. They got $75 million on next year's cap. They get all three of these guys done. They can dump that money this year and next year. And then wait on what they're going to do with Jalen Smith and Leighton Vander Esch, those guys down the line. But they got money to get all three of these guys done. It's not one or the other.
It's amazing.
At what number?
It's amazing that how the running backs are treated. Zeke is the best player on that football team. They run the football. He's the best player on that football team. But Dak is going to make more money. That's just a fact because he's a quarterback. Zeke should be holding out because, you know, one thing when it comes to running backs, we have a window. We have a window, and right now Zeke is like this. And by next year, next 2 years, he's gonna start leveling off. Then he's gonna start going down. That's the facts. So he has to get his money now. They should pay him now. I don't even blame Jerry Jones. I don't blame Zeke's age. I don't even blame Zeke. You have to look at the NFLPA. You have to look at how they set this up. You've got basically they can lock him in, really truly lock him in for 7 years. They can lock him in for the 4 years for the rookie deal. They can also then franchise him twice. Yeah. After that point, you know, like, you know what? I'll just get me a younger back. You know, we got a young.
Cheaper.
So he's got to get his money now. I don't blame him.
So, Eric, let me ask you this. Yeah. Hold on, Clarence. Let me ask you this. If you're Zeke, you and Dak are friends, but you know you're the best player on the football team, and Dak's about to get $30, $32 million a year, would that not impact your thinking?
I don't think it's not gonna impact my thinking. Money is funny when it comes to money. That's what like that there. You know you the best player. Of course you're gonna be like, damn man, this ain't right. But it is what it is. That's the problem. It is what it is. I mean, it's like football. Look, it's gonna only be four or five top running backs, truly top backs in the league. Mm-hmm. Same thing at the quarterback position. It may be five or six, but they'll pay the rest of those bums because. He's the quarterback of the team. He doesn't mean he deserves it. It's just because he's the quarterback at that position. That position is going to get paid no matter what.
All right, Clarence, let me ask you this, because you are the authority on the Cowboys. My contention has been when Dak walks into that locker room making $30, $32 million a year, it's going to up the pressure on him. He's been there. Everybody loves Dak. But once you come in making $30 million a year, he could get treated the way the Seattle Seahawks treated Russell Wilson. People could turn on him. If he's going to have to be an elite quarterback and perform at that level, or there will be some guys in that locker room that'll start publicly questioning.
Well, I know one thing, the fans are already questioning. I mean, Dak is already feeling the heat. I mean, as the Cowboys quarterback, there's no, you know, honeymoon period. You know, when he replaced Romo, there were people criticizing and critiquing him and ripping his game apart and taking his game apart. So certainly that's going to happen when he gets his money, and he's going to get his money. But Dak is a guy that can handle it. If you know anything about Dak, his leadership, his mindset, he sets the proper tone. He does things the right way. I don't think that's going to bother him. This is a guy that is the hardest worker on this team. He is a true leader. He's going to do everything necessary to be the best quarterback he can be. And the Cowboys buy into that. They have no problem
defensive players.
Defensive players love him, too. Everybody loves Dak Prescott. Dak, I mean,
defense is carrying that team.
Stop it.
It's not?
They've been there 3 years, right? Yeah. He's been there 3 years, two division titles. His rookie year, they went 13-3. Did the defense carry them then?
No.
No, 21 did.
No.
but they went hand in hand. Dak won rookie of the year. He had 20 touchdowns, right. 4 interceptions. They work hand in hand. Defense is not necessarily carrying that team. It's a complete team. They love Dak. They really do love
Dak. Yeah, you can love Dak. And I don't think that this is going to play into the locker room, because we all know we get in where we fit in.
Right.
You know, I've been in dynamics before where being a top DN is going to get you more than being a top linebacker. I'm like, I'm sorry, brother. I know you're going to Hall of Fame and all that. Respect. But I'm a DN on the rise. I'm going to get more than you. And it works out.
But y'all all been in the locker room before. Y'all understand it's a caste system. It's a hierarchy. Everybody knows.
Everybody knows that.
Everybody don't get the same money.
But this is different. This is different because Stephen Jones said, I'm not setting the market. So what does that mean? Because everyone always thinks about the top. I'm not going to be the one that puts up a higher number. But there are different tiers to the market. Mid-tier market, I'm not setting that. What if he's looking at Dak like, I'm not even setting the mid-tier market, which can mean what to Dak? So that means you're stuck in the 20s. And if Dak hears that, if Dak is hearing that from his agent, if that's the real terminology, how do you sign on the dotted line for something that you know as soon as you sign it, you're underpaid? That's not going to go well with him.
Stephen Jones is negotiating. That's negotiating employer. That's just talk. That's narrative. He has to say that. Of course, not setting the market means you react to the market. They let Russell Wilson deal get done. They let Aaron Rodgers get a new deal. Let Ben Roethlisberger get a new deal. They let Carson Wentz get a new deal while they're waiting on Dak, not setting the market. All they're doing is has driven up the market for Dak.
Except Tom Brady.
So they've mishandled.
Whatever that means. That could be an anomaly.
That's totally different.
They mishandled this.
Yes. I mean, they should have got Dak done. They could have got Dak done at $27 million, with the San Francisco quarterback guy. Now it's $30 or $32 million. The money's only going up. The more you wait, the more the money goes up. And we haven't even talked about Amari Cooper. Mm. His money's gone up, too.
Yeah. Michael Thomas.
Michael Thomas.
Yeah, and Julio Jones is coming. His money's going up, too. So, again, the Cowboys want to pay all three. They will pay all three. Jerry's not worried about it. You know, Jerry's negotiating. Again, it's personal for the players. It's personal for them because this is their money. Jerry's done 1,000 of these. This is the art of negotiating. He's about the art of the deal. Again, Jerry Jones is a guy that got the stadium built in the recession. He likes negotiating. Hmm.
Does this remind you of when Tom Landry and Roger Staubach had a contract?
Really,
We're doing this.
I've been there since 1997. I was there when he was there. I was there when he was there, okay?
They
got three playoff wins since I showed up, so I don't know nothing about titles, okay?
I never just had a chance to thank you for telling me first that it was over.
And that was, I read it, I'm like, is it? I'm still going to practice.
Wow.
Coming up. Joined now by senior Yahoo Sports NBA insider Chris Haynes. All right, let's move to the NBA, where Carmelo Anthony's been making a big push for a comeback, sitting down last week with Stephen A. Smith to talk about his love for the game and his desire to keep playing. But our buddy Steven Jackson actually says there's something more sinister behind Melo's absence from the NBA.
They always talk about when players go and play and team up with players, but they don't talk about this type of on how they treat players and just kick them out the league and just blackball them when they want to.
Obviously, I love this because, you know, we love to demonize the NFL. They blackball Colin Kaepernick, blah, blah, blah. It happens everywhere. And I think Steven Jackson is actually on to something a little bit with Melo. To me, based off that interview with Stephen A. Smith, Melo has value in this league. And if he's not in this league this year, I do believe the league has turned on him. And I think there's a tinge of credibility to him being blackballed.
I think blackball is harsh. I think if you go even further, talking about collusion is so difficult to prove. Let's talk about what blackball is. It's like you're rejecting something, and usually it's by secret ballot, secret conversation. Like, we're keeping this all as a collective away from you so you won't get your opportunities. I firmly believe Carmelo, by talent, even by production, deserves a chance. He's one of the 450 best basketball players still walking this planet. That said, it's always been more than talent that is a qualifier to being in professional sports. Why isn't Carmelo in the game right now? It's because there's another layer to this conversation that I don't think is a collection of thought. I think individually, every team, every owner is thinking the same thing. What's the difference? My thoughts are, Carmelo is a great player, aging superstar, aging star, whatever you want to call him. Difficult to mesh that with a lot of youngsters who I want to groom for their position in their prime, as well as difficult to mesh that with guys who are getting the love but are lesser in terms of what they have accomplished than Carmelo. Where do you fit? You don't necessarily fit with the youngsters in grooming, and you necessarily don't fit with our young stars because they're lesser than you and your best. So I think that's where the difficult fit is. What happens to me looking at it from my vantage point, that owner says it to himself. The next owner is thinking the same thing. It's an easy narrative. Phil Jackson said the most difficult thing to do in the NBA is coach an aging star. I think they're individually thinking this, not in collection, and not to the point of blackball.
I think, to your point about Phil Jackson, the most difficult thing about coaching an aging star is when that star is one-dimensional. Carmelo, all he is known is as a scorer. That's it. Now, when you get later on in your career, as you start to age, you start to produce. Now, look, talent-wise, he's better than a lot of players. Oh, yeah. Like, you know, look at Jared Dudley. And no disrespect to Jared Dudley, but Jared Dudley made a niche for himself probably about 3 or 4 years ago as a catch-and-shoot player and a good locker room guy. Carmelo hasn't put that perception out there for us to see. And now when you look at his talent-wise, yes, he's good. But once, if you're just one-dimensional, your point production start to erode, and then over time, that pool of teams that were high on you 5, 7 years ago, it dwindles down to about 3 or 4. And now, say there's 3 or 4 teams that's a fit, but you might not be their top priority in those 3 or 4. And so it dwindles down even more. So I think it has a lot more to do with Carmelo not accepting a new, like, he's never going to be a great defender. So that's fine. But I think he needed to show more leadership skills in the locker room probably 3 or 4 years ago that would adapt him to this time where owners and GMs could say, you know what, he may not be skillfully there, but he could be a good locker room presence.
And you guys have both made far better points than I originally did. And I want to piggyback off of what you guys are saying because I think you're exactly right. And so when I say a tinge of being blackballed, I agree with you, Marcel. It's just like people individually have a narrative on him that I think when I say blackball, it's like Daryl Morey is a power guy and part of the good old boy network. And I don't even say that negatively. He's just part of the power structure of the NBA. And the narrative on Carmelo is he's not going to help your young people develop mentally. And do we want to, and the narrative is he'll let a poison loose. What if our young players adopt his mentality the previously? But and again, maybe I'm reading way too much into one interview. I was so thoroughly impressed with the guy during his interview with Stephen A. Smith, his awareness, the depth of his understanding. I think he's in a different place, and I think if these NBA people look at that interview, it's worth engaging with Carmelo and having the discussion about how are you going to help us develop these young players into the right mentality? Because we can figure out a way to get you on the court for 20 minutes a night, leading our second unit. You can be a part of helping us, our offense, operate when our starters sit down. But are you going to be a positive influence on our culture? And I think he's open to that discussion.
You know what? If he's open to it now, they have actual evidence that he wasn't open to it when it was already suggested. That's a difficult place to be. Okay, I get it now. When they were like, we've been trying to make you understand this before. And then interview, emotionally, that context is not the same as being on a team, in the organization, in practice, where you're here as a guy who is a great locker room presence, who can give us help off the bench, whose main job is to get our stars ready. When you're off the bench, everyone talks about the game experience coming off the bench. Midway through the first quarter, I walk in, I'm Carmelo Anthony. I'm telling you, on Wednesday at practice, when they say 5-on-5, and they got shirts, they got skins, and Carmelo, you ain't jerseys, you ain't shirts, you skins. You on the other team, you on the B team, and your goal is to get him right. Your ego comes into play. I borrowed 2 years from the NFL when I knew, after Clarence Hill told me in Dallas, it was a wrap. Went to Jacksonville, locker room guy. And everything shifted in dynamic. You got to get these other dudes right. If you're not going to be the guy, you got to get the guy who is ready. Are you ready to take that? And then I retired after 2 years of borrowed time because I was like, this is a lot. I'm carrying dudes' helmets, and I'm me. And I'm not even Carmelo. To take that reduction in role, man, that's a hit. And if you can do that, fine. But my phone was still ringing after I left Jacksonville. And I said, nah, because I ain't made for that. If Carmelo's made for that, he has to make it more evident than just an interview. They got to see it.
He came off in an interview well,
yes,
expressing the fact that he's ready to take on that role. The problem is teams want to have already seen that from him at this stage. Now, this is the difficult part. If he gets that next opportunity and then he shows that he can be that vocal leadership guy type of guy, he can get 3 more years of service out. It will be easy for the next 3 or 4 years because he's shown it. It's just the fact that you're saying it, okay, that's fine. But it's another thing, like you said, to not have a jersey in practice and actually do it. And they haven't seen that with him.
But Chris, what's the risk? At this point, you sign Carmelo. A month in, it's not right. You just discard him. It's not that expensive. At this point, everybody's out from underneath his mammoth contract. And so I just don't see it as high risk. And I think that a team like, and maybe I'm crazy for thinking this, but the Golden State Warriors, they could bring him in. Look, they brought Boogie in and helped Boogie rehabilitate his image and thought process and teach him a winning culture. I think there may be an opportunity for Carmelo. Again, he can't play defense the way Iguodala did, but I think he can be a better offensive player. And they may need that on their second unit, particularly when Klay Thompson's not available the first half or the first 3/4 of the season. I just think someone should take a chance on Carmelo and cut him loose if it doesn't work.
There is very minimal risk for a team in contention. Now, the problem is these teams only have one spot left. And you see the Lakers, the Clippers, they're trying to fill that spot with Andre Iguodala, championship guy, somebody that they know is going to come in, fit right in. So I agree with you. It's a minimal risk, but you're wasting time. I'm not trying to say this way. He definitely deserves to be in the NBA. But most of these teams don't want to waste time, and they feel like that's just not the ideal primary fit for us.
Yeah, I mean, this is a difficult conversation because, as you know, I love Carmelo, but I'm just talking about how this thing works. And this game works where there are going to be few teams that actually want him by his style of play. You know, ISOs type, mid-range game. X's and O's, you reduced it from 30 to a number. Then you get even fewer teams that have the job security upstairs in terms of decision makers in a league that is risk averse. All leagues are risk averse. That's why you got to look a certain way. You got to be a certain height, jump a certain thing. That's why we got combine. So you could tell an owner who's flying around on private jets when he lands, oh, that's why I picked him. It's pretty obvious. It's not so obvious right now for Carmelo, and that's what's hurting.
All right, welcome back to Speak for Yourself, the most fun you can have talking sports. Whitlock and Wiley, Bucky Brooks is back with us. Time to get antisocial. Darnell, what you got?
Yes, sir. We're going to start with the Raiders, who are well off into camp right now, but have been missing their superstar receiver. I think this picture should explain why AB posted this picture of his feet on IG a few days ago. All types of blisters going on. I don't know what's going on right there. When Coach Gruden asked about it, AB being gone, he said, I think we're all disappointed. We want to get the party started. So, guys, should Raiders fans be worried already?
Yes. And I think John Gruden's legitimately frustrated for this reason. How do you get to this point without looping us in so we can start doing some preventative measures?
Yeah.
When you're this important to the franchise, they got to have a holistic approach to your whole body and they're upset with AB.
Yeah. A little trust is broken here because we know you're a hard worker, so we kind of turn a blind eye to when you work, when you need to pass to do your own thing. But if you come back like this, you blew through some stop signs, brother. Your body will always respond and react, and it whispers before it yells. Those feet are yelling at you, brother. Like, calm down, take care of me, dead skin, everything. So he kind of blew through some stop signs.
First thing they always talk about in camp, be a pro.
Yeah.
Be a professional. He is a professional. He makes his money with his legs, his feet, his hands, all those things. He has to take care of those things. To me, it shows a sign of immaturity that he can't take care of business, make sure he's available for the squad.
All right, guys. So Jets rookie Quinnen Williams was asked about his Madden rating and had a little awkward slip up. Take a listen.
My rating, I got an 80 on Ultimate Team. So I'm going to go play with myself today. So see how I feel. That came out weird. I'm going to go play with myself today. So, see how I feel. That came out weird. I'm mad. I'm playing myself. I'm mad.
I thought it was hilarious. I just want to ask you guys, what was your reaction?
He will feel good. He's right. He will feel good.
One hand with the controller?
You can still play. Can you still play?
Might play better.
And our coordination.
That was funny. It was one of those, like, at first I laughed, and I was like, did he have that loaded? It almost like it was too smooth, man, but that was hilarious.
Yeah, look, good kid. He's caught himself a couple times in media dust-ups. This was pretty funny, though.
Yeah, he's good.
All right, let's move to Darnell's question of the day. All right, take it away.
All right, guys, so California recently passed a statewide law that further limits tackling at the youth football practice. A couple of their new laws were no full contact practices during all season, and then full contact is only limited to 30 minutes per week. And it sounds like they're also headed towards a tackling ban for all players under the age of 12. So I want to ask you guys, would this be a good idea?
Banning tackle football for everybody under 12 would be an overreaction, in my opinion. But that's what we do now. We overreact to whatever the media narrative is that's being pushed. I saw something last week over Twitter, a report about how CTE is found in people that have had no history of playing contact sports. I'm someone that believes the CTE argument is not being told properly.
In jest, I'm like, do whatever you want to do, because my son ain't playing tackle football at that age. I just don't think it's a necessary evil anymore. Look, the flip side, the serious side of this conversation is, what are you going to do with a kid from, like myself, who was 8 years old to the age of 12, who got a lot of his identity, his discipline, his work ethic, his structure from playing tackle football? But a lot of guys are going to be littering the Hall of Fame coming forward. Drew Brees comes to mind, who didn't play youth tackle football, who learned how to play the game at a high level, the highest level. So do you want your 11-year-old concussed? Okay, it's not about CT. Like me, do you want your son's knee dislocated, hamstring torn, and you're 9 years old talking about I want a Pop Warner championship? I just don't think that's the necessary role. My son's playing flag.
Oh, see, now I'm a guy. I played Pop Warner, won a national championship when I was 14 for a Pop Warner squad back in Raleigh. Shout out to the North Raleigh Braves. But I believe that you still can play. I think the measures that they're putting in, when they're saying 30 minutes of full contact, that basically means full contact where you can take them to the ground. I believe today's Pop Warner coaches should know how to teach the game without being scrimmaging all the time. Basically, what they want the Pop Warner leagues to mimic what they're doing in the pros. In the pros, you rarely go to a practice and see full contact tackling. Right. You want to see guys at a thud tempo. Teach the young kids how to play right. Then you don't have to worry about all the injuries and some of the concerns that you expressed about your son.
But we police it better at the pro level, obviously,
for
because
sure.
of resources. Most coaches are great, but I go to a lot of Pop
Warner
practices. Again. It's a disgruntled, almost made it coach who's
living his life,
living through their kid and going overboard. And who's going to police 30 minutes? Come on, man.
I listen. One, Bucky's a high school coach and deals with youth football all the time. But Marcellus, you made a point earlier about you as a kid from 8 to 12. You talked about identity, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I was a hyper-aggressive kid. I was hyperactive on hyperactive medicine, blah, blah, blah. If not for football and me having a proper outlet for me to get rid of some of my aggression,
right?
I don't know where else I would have got rid of my aggression.
Flag football? That doesn't count?
You
just got
to
lay somebody out?
I need to hit somebody.
So somebody's getting laid out, though.
Yeah, I need
at
to
nine.
Hit somebody.
Necessary?
I played with kids older than me.
Uh-huh.
And again, I needed that.
All right.
Because I could misdirect that.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. I'm not trying to push and say absolutely we need to get rid of it, but it's going to be hard to police the medium if we're going to try middle.
It's going to be hard to police it, but I think if we can focus on the good things that come from playing team sports and tackle football, think about the mentors, the things that you learn in terms of hard work, teamwork, the conditioning, getting guys to exercise and get out and run laps and do all that other stuff. So there's so many good things in youth tackle football that I would hate to see kids miss out on just because we're overreacting to some of the stuff that's out there.
Eric Dickerson and Bucky Brooks are back. Let's move to Tom Brady, who might have turned 42 this weekend, but that didn't stop him from signing a 2-year contract extension, which keeps him under contract in New England through 2022 and raises his salary this season from $15 million to $23 million. But as the NFL Network's Ian Rappaport reports, the final 2 years of the deal actually void at the end of this year, and the Patriots cannot use the franchise or transition tag on Brady. All right, the question here is, I think that either Brady or the Patriots want this to end sooner than later. Yeah. I'm not 100% sure who, but I'm asking you guys, who is more eager to see this contract play out, Brady or the Patriots?
Patriots. It's not even a close call for me. Look, the Super Bowl champion, New England Patriots, let me say that respectfully. So while you have this level of success, it's obvious. Let's just keep rolling with it, even though it may be moving the ball down the field in terms of what we have to ultimately make in terms of decision. But the Patriots are like, we're not rushing to get you out the door, but it is soon as we see underperformance, as soon as we see that we're not living up to expectations. And that could be divisional round loss for this team. It's a Super Bowl champion team. As soon as they see it, they're going to run with it. Because you can see too many predictions already of his demise early. And then you're going to see that the narrative is already out there with his age and birth certificate. So as soon as they see any sign that gives them the opportunity to say, let's move on, they will. Because one, the next quarterback will be cheaper, more than likely drafted through their system on a rookie deal. You could have that guy on a cheaper contract. Two, you remove a power figure out of this equation in New England where it's just going to be Kraft and Belichick. And we've seen Belichick a little eager to do that before with Jimmy G, and it didn't work out like he desired. I think next time they're ready to pull the plug.
Before you guys hop in, Marcellus, you have flipped me and helped me to see that they've already set the standard. They move on from guys before they fall off a cliff.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't do it with Brady, then, you got a different set of rules for Tom Brady.
Yeah.
So they've set a standard
mm-hmm.
that this is how we do all players. Everything we've ever heard about Belichick and Brady is Belichick treats Brady like everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
The system's in place.
Seymour, McGinnis,
for the Patriots to move on from Brady.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it is in place for them to move on. I think this is smart business for them. I think this is how they've gotten down. They've been successful being able to do this. They would rather move on from you a year too early than a year too late. And I also think the stars are lining up where if they make this move, they could have two options available for them. We know that they drafted Jarrett Stidham. They took Jarrett Stidham last year. He's already there. But also, there are two guys that could come up as free agents when they move on for Tom Brady. Jacoby Brissett, Indianapolis Colts, he will be at the end of his rookie deal, I think at the end of this year. And then Jimmy Garoppolo. If Jimmy Garoppolo doesn't play well in San Francisco, they can move on from that contract this year. So Bill Belichick, in essence, could still get someone that he developed to replace Tom Brady and not worry about the ship sinking when he does depart.
Well, I agree with you. New England Patriots for sure. I mean, they're going to move on. I mean, look, Tom Brady is 42, not 32, not even 22. Hmm. But the big thing is for Tom Brady is like all players, you know, when you come in, you love football. You love playing it. You love everything about it. I'm sure he still loves the sport. That's why he won't quit playing. I mean, at this age, at 42 years old, you've won multiple Super Bowls. What else do you have to prove? The thing now is I love it. What else am I going to do? I don't have anything to do. Mm-hmm. Look, my wife makes most of the money. If somebody asks you, okay, A, you have a nice girl over here with a nice little job. B, you have the supermodel that's making $40, $50 million a year. Bob, I'll take B.
No doubt.
No doubt.
Yeah,
so,
man.
I mean, for Tom Brady, it's the love of the game. That's why he still plays it, because I can think about it. You know, you think about when you first came in. Mm. Like you I loved everything about the practice, you know, the smell of it. But, you know, when you get older, for us, you know, playing running back, defensive, you know, you're like, man, I can't take too many more of these hits. Quarterback is different.
All right, let me ask this then. Maybe both sides want this year to be it. Could you see Tom Brady, because Rappaport says Tom Brady, free agent after this season. Could you see Tom Brady playing in another uniform? Do you think he's capable of doing that?
Yes, but I think it's going to be with trepidation. I think Tom Brady is being sold right now, loyalty, brand, and the fact that if you stay a Patriot, what that means in terms of TB12 and every other endeavor you do. Like, that whole Kobe model, you know, draft the Lakers, retire Lakers, that means something. Duncan, all these greats. So he's been sold that, but he's also thinking of what's my out. That's why in this same contract, you can't franchise me. You can't make me stay here unless it's under the circumstances and conditions I desire. Mm-hmm. So that means to me, the player in him is saying, I could put on a different jersey if forced to. Now, the Patriots are sitting there like, I don't know what your value is. You're 42. There's no precedent. We don't know what to look at. You're the best house in the neighborhood that there are no comps. It's like, who else is 42 doing this? So we have no comps. So your value is what? And as long as you're winning Super Bowl, it's not a conversation. But it's impossible to keep winning Super Bowls. So the next time this dips, that's when they're going to strike.
You know, I think it's a situation. They are constantly evaluating his performance and production. But I do believe Tom hears all the outside noise. He's heard that for so long. He's been propped up by Bill Belichick. Maybe there is a bit of a competitor in him that maybe he finishes somewhere else because he wants to prove to people that he can win. I'm not saying that it's so because he's been so tied to the Patriots. But maybe there is something like, oh, okay, you don't think I can play? Mm. How about I go back home to San Francisco? Or how about I go somewhere else and prove to you that I still have it?
I'd say no. He's a Patriot for life. I mean, I just feel like that with Tom Brady, like most athletes that have an opportunity to finish with the team they started with, he's won, like I say, won again, multiple Super Bowls.
Michael Jordan finished with the Wizards.
Yeah, but it's not the same.
Peyton Manning went to Denver, got a Super Bowl.
He didn't want to.
Didn't want, but he did.
But he didn't want to. That's the difference. He didn't want to. And he doesn't have to. That's not like Tom Brady doesn't have to. Like, when he finished his career, he's done everything he wanted to do. It's not like, he just win one more Super Bowl. Just one more. Just let me get one more. It's not like that.
Let me prove one time I can do it without Belichick.
Yeah, but I still say the same thing. I think it means more to him to just have worn one uniform his whole career.
And once again,
that got that wife that's making all that money. Look, stay at home with these kids.
All right,
before we go, all our nannies.
I want to commend Ed Reed and Tony Gonzalez for their Pro Football Hall of Fame induction speeches. The greatest safety and the greatest tight end gave two of the most unique speeches in the history of Canton, Ohio. Gonzalez spoke with the polish of a seasoned broadcaster. Reed spoke with a candor that social media desperately tries to prevent. They used their life stories to craft messages aimed at young people. While fighting tears, Reed discussed the choices he had to make at an early age to protect his athletic future and his opportunity to uplift his family from poverty.
I had to grow up fast, y'all. I had to mature real fast because of my environment. It was crime-infested, drugs, police, all kind of things going on.
Reed said a police officer stopped him one night, forced him to get in the back of his patrol car, and gave him advice that would change his life.
Son, I know you. I see you around here playing sports. So you don't need to be hanging with those other kids and other guys because you have something.
Reed said he backed away from friends involved in criminal activity. He moved in with a school counselor and her husband to avoid the violence and trouble in his own neighborhood. Reed then added,
I would say to the point of what we have going on in our society, don't aggravate or should I say push an officer to have to do something they don't have to do, shouldn't have to do. We all are human beings. Just make it home, man. Take your ticket and go. Just take that slap on the wrist and get arrested.
Reed's words were simple common sense, but that kind of public airing of common sense has been illegalized by social media. We pretend there is value in arguing with an armed men and women who the government has granted life and death power. Gonzalez's speech focused on explaining how he used failure and criticism to evolve and grow.
The downs is where the learning is. That's where the knowledge comes. That is the reason why I'm standing here. It's not about the touchdowns. It's not about the catches. It's not about the glory. The most learning you'll ever do is when you go through the bad times. In fact, that's part of it. That's part of it. So welcome that when it comes, because I know what it's done for me.
Gonzalez's initial years at Cal Berkeley were a waste because he prioritized socializing and partying. His second year in the NFL, he led the league in drops and appeared to be a bust. He changed his approach to the game and his mindset by reading books about some of the greatest achievers in sports and life.
All you kids out there playing football or any sport, when you start out, it ain't how you start out, it's how you finish. First thing you got to do is get through that fear. First thing you got to do.
So much of modern discourse is compromised by celebrities saying things publicly they don't say privately. I ask people all the time, is that the advice you would give your kids? I didn't have to ask that Saturday night listening to Ed Reed and Tony Gonzalez. More Speak for Yourself after this. Chris Haynes is back with us. Let's move to the Warriors, who might not have been able to keep Kevin Durant this offseason, but will be keeping Draymond Green around for a while. Handing Draymond a 4-year, $100 million contract extension, Green has long been the heart and soul of the Warriors, but is coming off a down year where he was out of shape and got into a major public spat with Kevin Durant. Question here, is smart for the Warriors to commit long-term to Draymond Green?
I think it's smart, and I think it's a win-win. I think that Draymond is thinking, I don't know how kind the market will be to me as a free agent. Let's just be real. You know, his numbers don't really tell his true value in terms of his production. So the Swiss Army knife on the open market may get a little undervalued. And the Warriors are sitting there like, okay, he's going to make 25 per. Some people will say that's a lot for Draymond. I don't think so, because you're going to blink and there will be guys making $50 million in very short term. So it's a smart deal from both sides. I see it as a win-win.
It's definitely a win-win. But from the Warriors' standpoint, I think they got the best of this situation. You lock him up for 4 years. He has a player option, something that the Warriors typically don't give to their players. Stephen Curry, Klay Thompson, none of those guys had that. And I reported a few minutes ago that he also his contract also contains a 15% trade kicker. So that's going to work in his benefit. But I will say this. There are some
plain trade kicker.
Now, he will get 15% of his contract if he is traded to another team. Gotcha. So that makes it difficult for that other for their team to want to go
a and pay trade. Raise. Yeah. Huh?
So also, when it comes to Draymond, there are players who are going to be free agents next summer who look at this situation and say, hey, man, you know, he settled because he could have got 150 max deal from another team had he hit free agency, 200 if he stayed with Golden State. And so they're looking at it like it's setting the market for me. Mm. So if I play a similar position, I might even be better than Draymond. But now his contract is setting the market for me next summer. So it does, they're not feeling it. But for him, it's a win-win. They need him to keep this nucleus together, to keep the championship contending team intact.
To me, this sounds like the Warriors and Draymond are on one accord, that their relationship is rock solid. And it should be, because I think clearly the Warriors chose loyalty to Draymond Green over Kevin Durant. I think they would have had a better shot at retaining Kevin Durant if they were willing to move on from Draymond, weren't willing to do that. And so Draymond appreciates that loyalty. He doesn't break their back financially. He doesn't play this all the way out to try to see if he can get a $200 million deal or $150 million someplace else. So I think this works for both sides. I think this is the one organization where Draymond, two or three years from now, he's going to always make sense for the Golden State Warriors because of Klay and Steph will be there. He's got to be their backbone. He's got to be their bodyguard, their doorman.
The good citizen argument never falls in the right place for me. And I know what you're saying. Like, oh, Draymond, here's your reward for loyalty. But in part, that loyalty comes at a cost. And I think Draymond is thinking, like, what is my price in the real marketplace? And once he comes to that understanding, look, his numbers last year, 9-7-5. Okay, you could say Draymond Green is a free agent. You say, oh. And then when they start diving into these numbers, and then they start to say, what does that translate in terms of price? That's where I think Draymond, and Rich Paul's smart. Rich Paul's like, Draymond, let's be real about this. And this may hurt a little, but do you really want to roll the dice out there? I mean, look, there's arguments on both
sides.
Numbers
going to be a lot different this coming year with no Kevin Durant.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But then that's still a roll of the dice, because then you could get injured. If he's injured like Klay Thompson and Kevin Durant, is he getting a $100 million contract? Draymond. Like, that's a whole different animal, because you don't have anything to bank on in terms of this absurd production. You got a guy who does it all, but he's a jack of all trades, not a king of one. And I think that Rich Paul and him said, look, this is $100 million to you, guaranteed no matter what happens going forward. That's a smart play for a guy who didn't reset his expectations, because he's like, I'm still Draymond. I'm still a second rounder who now is in this conversation.
Is it Dray? Is it Dray?
Yeah, right. I applaud him for not getting caught up in the sauce, because these dudes, a lot of dudes went to the free agency thinking they was going to get something, and it wasn't there.
Yeah, no, you have to look at Draymond. Everybody criticizes him for what he does on the Golden State Warriors. Say, you wouldn't do this on another team. And I think it is safe to say that his value to the Warriors is much more immense than it would be on any other team.
Yeah.
But that's not to take anything away from him. That's just what he just fits the dynamic and the personnel of that roster.
Uncle Jimmy's here to help us talk about our approval rating for Baker Mayfield. Who's your big dummy of the day?
You?
What's new?
Man, how you gonna sit up here and talk about Clarence Hill and call him old? You do know that the man's 47, right?
Ooh.
Clarence Hill ain't 47.
Man, you older than him. If you ain't, you look older than him.
All right. Here's a highlight from our discussion earlier about Baker Mayfield, or as I like to call him, Little Smokey.
You know, good crack don't black.
I think it's a mistake for Mayfield to put this much pressure on himself and an organization that's trying to win under the direction of a first-time head coach. Smoke inhalation is deadly.
Football is a great game of skill, but a greater game of will. And whenever you can pour on energy to that, I've seen magical things happen.
All right, Uncle Jimmy, what's your thoughts on Baker Mayfield?
All right, man, look here. It's real simple what's going on with Baker Mayfield right now. All right? It just depends on how you look at it. If he wins, he's Joe Namath.
Yeah. Yep.
If he loses, he's Johnny Manziel. You know, let me put it another way. If he wins, you got the Broadway Browns. You got, or if he wins, then you got Baker. If he loses, you got Baker football.
Baker football.
You know, look at man. Bad. Despite whatever y'all say, Uncle Jimmy got an eye for talent. Yeah. You know, I have the ability to spot a diamond in the buff. Even though sometimes it might be floating in gravy.
Blue M&M's.
You know, a lot of you guys, man, y'all see a woman pushing three bills. It scare you a little bit. It intimidates you. You don't see what Uncle Jimmy see. You know, I know for a fact that the right diet and exercise regimen, that woman can be Pam Grier. All five of my ex-wives at some point or another had a little bit of Pam Grier in them. Mm.
And this relates to Baker Mayfield how?
Because that's what I see in Baker Mayfield.
Oh.
Baker Mayfield could be Joe Namath if you ain't careful.
Oh. Okay. All right.
Now, this could be Pam because Grier. I'm an optimist.
Yeah.
Unlike you, my nephew, who's a cynic. Who you have to question everything. Mm.
That's true.
You know, as a matter of fact, you as a journalist, what's your favorite quote? If your mother says she loves you, you need to get a second opinion. Now, that, I heard you say that.
That is true.
That's great.
Okay, see, I had some friends that kind of operated on that mentality. See, and they would look at my ex-wives and they couldn't see the beauty that I seen.
Yeah, me either.
Because they saw the beauty, but they couldn't see past the scales. At 315 scared them off a little bit.
Numbers in the way, huh?
Yeah, just left in the show. Oh, y'all screwed up.
It's time to go.
My approval rating for Baker Mayfield, 76 All-Star.
Good.
Down a couple of points.
Yeah, I had to drop him. Only really in job performance. A lot of one-handed catches in practice. Be more accurate,
right,
Baker.
Other than that, you kill it. We'll see you tomorrow.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.